This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. It is Bryce and Ren here, co-founders of Equity Mates Media, and we're here to announce our IPO.
That's right. Equity Mates' initial party offering is here. FinFest is coming.
We're calling all bulls, bears, and party animals. The market's closed, the bar is open, and we're trading ideas at Australia's biggest investing festival.
With expert speakers, special guests, DJs, and booze, it's an inspiring and empowering event for investors of any level of experience.
So save the date, 15th of October, 2022. Head to equitymates.com/finfest to register your interest today.
Equity Mates FinFest is powered by Stake.
You're listening to Get Started Investing, a production of Equity Mates Media. This series is everything you need to get started on your investing journey.
You don't need a lot of brains in this business. Investing in yourself is the best thing you can do. Anything that improves your own
talent. Now you can get rich very young just by having an idea.
I mean, I can buy anything I want, basically, but I can't buy time.
Welcome to Get Started Investing. In this podcast, we cover all the basics that you need to start your investing journey. Are you joining us for the very first time? Is this the very start of your investing journey? Well, before you dive into this episode with us, our feed is designed to go from the very beginning. So we strongly recommend that you scroll up and start at episode one. However, if you are feeling brave and just want to dive in, then of course, don't let us stop you. Here at JSI, we unpack all the jargon and the confusing bits. We hear your investing stories with the goal of making investing less intimidating. And we want to have a good time along the way. My name is Bryce. And as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. That intro always feels long, but it is worth it. Glad to be here for another week. And glad to be doing an episode that we haven't done in a while, which is we've gone out to Instagram, we've gone out to our Facebook group, and we've got some emails come in. There's a bunch of questions that we have to answer, and we're going to try and do them quickly because otherwise this episode could be an hour and a half long.
Yeah, wow. We don't want that. That'll almost be as long as my intro. What's a year without me having another crack at an intro on one of our shows? So I might take that as a note.
To add another paragraph.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, look, before we do, two really exciting pieces of housekeeping, and we will keep these brief. First of all, you've probably heard us say it before, but FinFest is coming. Equity Mates IPO, our initial party offering, is here.
Yep.
You don't want to miss it. We're calling all bulls, bears, and party animals.
That's it.
The market's closed. The bar is open. We thought of a lot of taglines. That's how excited we are. Bryce, what should people do?
All you need to do is register your interest because we are going to be releasing early bird tickets within a matter of weeks. So we don't want you to miss that opportunity. It's on the 15th of October here in Sydney. Have no fear if you're not in Sydney. We will make it as easy as possible for some of our interstate listeners to get here as well. So make sure you sign up so you don't miss all of that information.
Okay, that's
a must not miss.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to miss it. Second piece of housekeeping, we got a new podcast. If you're feeling overwhelmed by finance news and you want someone, aka us, to simply break it down, we've got a business news show. It's called The Dive. The feed is up. The first episode drops in a couple of weeks. So go over, listen to the trailer, subscribe, and we'll tell you more about it in the coming weeks.
That's it, Ren. Business news doesn't have to be boring. Is that our tagline for that?
Who says business news needs to be all business?
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice. So, yeah, we're really excited. It's a podcast that we felt Australia has needed and the world has needed for a while. There is no one breaking down business news in a way that we're going to.
That's a big call. So it's The Dive. Head over, subscribe now, wherever you're listening to this. It will be available. But Bryce, let's get into the Q&A.
Yeah.
We went out to our Instagram, our Facebook group, And we asked what investing questions the Equity Mates community have. I also asked them if they have any questions for you, and there were two that came in. Well, there's a lot going on in your life at the moment, you know. You're about to get married.
True.
Maybe a baby on the way?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
But the two big questions that came back for you.
Am I answering these now?
Yeah.
Okay.
For people watching on YouTube, they can see this visually because they were both about your appearance.
Oh, dear.
The first one was, what's happened to the backwards hat? And the second one is, what hair wax is Bryce using? So obviously a lot of interest in your above the eyebrows
above the fold. The backwards hat is still in play. You can see it's just over there. It's not on my head right now.
Yeah, well, people watching can't see it because we don't have a camera that pans.
But it is still in play. Becoming less and less, I have noticed that.
It was a summer thing.
Yeah, I think so, okay. Potentially, which is weird because you'd probably want it in winter to keep your head a bit warm. You know what it was? I found a couple of hats that really actually fit my head.
So, I didn't expect a genuine response to this, but I'm glad I got it.
But so, yeah. Anyway, we'll leave it there. We don't want this to be too long.
And people watching, looking at Bryce's hair, seeing how beautifully waxed it is on YouTube, he keeps that wax formulation a deep, dark secret.
Well, this is the surprising thing. I actually don't use any, and it's because of the hat that it keeps it down in the mornings.
It's natural, and then, natural waxes.
Yeah. I don't shampoo.
All right. Anyway, that's enough about your above-the-fold attire. Let's get into investing. And obviously, there's a lot of focus on what's going on at the moment in markets. So a couple of questions or iterations of this, which is basically, what's your plan of attack for current times?
Plan of attack for current times? Yeah, it's incredibly interesting times at the moment, isn't it? It hasn't really drastically changed. I've just eased off the frequency of which I'm putting money into the market.
That feels like every personal finance expert and financial advisor's worst nightmare. Well, maybe not worst nightmare, but aren't you meant to like be consistent when markets are volatile?
Yeah, there's a B part to this. I actually just went in on more on an equity builder, which is kind of why I've eased off on.
So you haven't eased off at all?
I guess not. I took out a leverage position.
I think, you know, obviously we're not going to say what you should and shouldn't buy, but I think the main thing is, well, for me at least, my strategy hasn't changed. And just as I was investing in the middle of 2021 when we were in the middle of a bull market and everything seemed to be going well, I've stuck to that plan and I'm consistently putting money into the market, into a variety of assets that I just am dollar cost averaging into.
What I want to point out, and I wish we might talk about this on Equity Mates, but have you noticed that some of these tech stocks are roaring back?
Yeah. Well, roaring is a relative term if you zoom out.
But of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. But there could be a bit of a dead cat bounce happening. But some of this, like Spotify up 30% 2 weeks ago. Anyway, I'm not going to go through all the stocks, but a lot of these tech stocks.
Oh, you do an investing podcast? Tell me all the stocks.
Yeah, it's an interesting one that how quickly some of this is turning at the moment.
Yeah, it is.
And making the most of the opportunities.
Yeah. Mm. Honestly, at times like this, I'm very happy that my personality type is quite lazy because I just don't check it a lot. Mm. Like I just have a consistent plan, and the more you can distract yourself with life outside of investing and just consistently plug away at whatever your investing strategy is, probably the happier and less stressed you will be.
That's it.
All right. Next question, Bryce.
Mm-hmm. Best interval to dollar cost average. Is it weekly? Is it fortnightly? Is it monthly?
I don't think there's a perfect answer for this. I think it's very dependent on your money habits. Mm-hmm. For me, it relates to the frequency of my paycheck. Mm-hmm. So I used to get paid monthly and getting paid monthly sucks. That's a side note, but you really have to be good at budgeting. And so I would dollar cost average monthly. Mm-hmm. Now we run our own business and we pay ourselves fortnightly. Mm-hmm. Although I think we should pay each other daily.
All right, I'll take it up with HR.
So I try and put money away when I get paid. So now I'm fortnightly. But for me, that's just the easiest way because it sort of fits in with my money habits.
Mm.
But, you know, some people might want to save a certain amount and then do it. It's really whatever works for you. There's no
right or wrong.
Yeah.
I would also just, if you don't happen to be using one of the brokers that has either really cheap brokerage or free brokerage on ETFs, if you are dollar cost averaging into stocks and paying $9.50, $19.50, whatever it is, just be very careful of your frequency of dollar cost averaging, because that can add up quite significantly.
Mm. All right, Bryce, next question from Instagram. Why is it, as a man who briefly tried to day trade, this question seems perfect for you. Why is it bad to try and time the market?
Well, because you're just taking a punt on something that you absolutely have no control over, and making investment decisions based on a forecast that no one can predict is the wrong move. No one can time the market. Buffett can't time the market. They don't try and time the market. And it's not about trying to pick the bottom and run it on the way up. You want to be confident in the company that you're investing in, that it's going to be a good investment over a long period of time. It shouldn't matter that you buy it today when the market's down 5% or tomorrow when the market's up 10%.
Yeah, I would just add to that. It's not that it's good or bad. It's not like we're making a value judgment about the strategy. It's just really, really hard.
Mm.
And most people can't do it.
It's actually almost impossible.
Yeah, and those that can do it generally quantify that into trading algorithms with supercomputers at large hedge funds and can do it quicker than the rest of us. It's not we're saying like this strategy is bad or good. It's just that it's really difficult to execute. So if you're one of the few that can, great. But most of us, and me speaking personally, I definitely can't.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest risks in trying to time the market is that you're not going to be investing in the market as often as you probably should be. If you're waiting for the market to drop, so to speak, to take advantage of a lower market, you could be missing out on gains. Mm. Like if you tried to say in 2010 that you're going to wait to the market for the market to drop again, you've missed one of history's biggest bull runs.
Yeah. Alf and Darcy, who run our Get Started Investing Instagram page, posted something, and I'm not going to try and explain the chart, but head over there and have a look, because it basically looked at what your returns were if you invested in like the American market, the S&P 500, and then if you invested in the S&P 500 without the 10 best days of the last decade, the 20 best days of the last decade, the 30 best days of the last decade, and it makes a real difference. So if you miss those 10 great days, it takes a big chunk out of your overall return. Mm. And so if you're going to try and time the market, you have to be really good and not miss those 10 days. And I am not really good.
If you could do it, you'd be a billionaire. Next question, best ETFs for a core portfolio, Ren.
Yeah, so obviously there is so much ETF choice. I think, 250-odd exchange-traded products in
Australia? This morning,
276.
Yeah.
276, and then probably thousands over in the US, however many in Europe. So there's so much choice. And there's no perfect product mix. It depends on, you know, how far away from retirement you are and what your investing goals are and what your risk appetite is. But I think if you're thinking about what ETFs make up your core portfolio, I think there's some things to think about. The number one for me is diversification.
Nice.
And when we talk about diversification, we mean what are the risks that could lead to you losing money, and how do you spread your money across those risks? And so it's things like geographic diversification. You don't just want to be in Australia or just in the US. You want to spread your money around the world. And with that also comes ETF overlap. So if you buy an S&P 500 American ETF, a NASDAQ 100 American ETF, and a MSCI All World ETF, the biggest holdings in those three ETFs are all going to be the same. They're all going to be the big tech companies. So you want to have a look at what is actually in the ETFs you're buying. But I think spreading your money across different countries in different stock markets, if you're going like thematic ETFs, you want to spread it across different industries. Anything else that you would say you should think about?
No, I think that's a really good spread. The only other thing to consider, Ren, would be the fees that are charged on your ETFs. So some of the thematic fees, they have management fees that are a little bit higher than your more traditional index funds, your A200s, the funds that just follow the large markets. So fees do make a difference over a long period of time. So just check your fees.
Check your fees. All right, Bryce, next one comes in via email. Question about retirement. Mm-hmm. And I guess you have, over our journey here at Equity Mates and Get Started Investing, you have had a lot to say about the financial independence retire early movement.
I have.
but I feel like you're coming around to it.
Potentially.
Okay, we'll put a pin in that. All right, so Bryce, the question here is around the FIRE movement, and how do you actually build up that amount of money, that nest egg, I guess we call it, and then actually take money out of that to live and fund your retirement, especially if you're doing it when you're, I think people try and aim for like 40.
Yeah.
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 It's a lot of life left when you're 40.
It is a lot of life left. So first part of the question, how you build money up and how you know, I think there's plenty of online calculators for FIRE to figure out what nest egg you need.
Yeah. Shout out to Aussie Firebug. He's been doing this longer than, maybe even longer than us.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, similar time.
Similar time. Yeah.
And so in theory, what you're trying to say is by the time I'm 40, I need X amount to live per year. And these calculators will then tell you what is the lump sum of money that you need to be able to generate that income for the next 40 years or 60 years or however long you're going to live. The challenge here is where some people get confused is that you're not building up $1 million nest egg and then that's it and you're selling down year after year after year. You actually want to be building a portfolio that generates income. And this is the difference. You know, you actually don't want to have to sell down your positions back to zero because then you're back to square one. There is elements of selling it down, but the goal is to actually be generating an income from your investment portfolio.
Yeah.
Very similar to superannuation. Yes, there is capital. You are selling your capital during retirement, but the majority of it is coming through income from your portfolio investment.
Yeah, I think that's the sensible way to do it. Like to not plan to sell your capital. If you look in the FIRE community, or if you look in just like normal retirement content, there's a lot of talk about this 4% rule, which is basically when you're building a retirement plan, you should plan to sell down 4% of your capital each year to fund your living expenses. And in that scenario, by the time your retirement ends, which is a euphemism for you dying, you're sort of back to zero.
Mm.
So look, we're not retirement experts. I think for me, the main thing is figure out how much you need to live. And then to your point, figure out what assets pay an income to get you there. But I think if I was getting to that point, if I was 40 and I had $1 million invested and I was like, I think I can retire, I would definitely be pulling the trigger on a financial advisor. Like you are making huge financial life decisions that will affect you for decades to come.
Yeah.
If that's not the point you pay for advice, I don't know when it is.
Yeah, yeah. Ren, let's take a quick break before we come back with plenty more questions on the other side of it. So let's quickly hear from our sponsors.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate lightweight, super packable travel shoes from Allbirds. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
All right, Ren, question from you. So this one's come in from Instagram. What is your opinion on margin lending?
This is a can of worms and we only want to open it so far. But I think the really important thing to keep in mind, so margin lending, for people that aren't familiar, is basically borrowing money from a bank to buy more stocks.
Mm-hmm.
So people will sometimes equate it to getting a mortgage to buy property. But the structure of those two loans is not the same.
No.
Because if your property falls 50%, when does the property fall 50%?
That would be nice.
No, we would actually have to afford it. But if your property falls 50%, your mortgage might be too high. You might be in negative equity. You might be underwater. But it's not like the bank comes and takes your house.
Yeah.
But with a margin loan, if your stocks fall 50% and you can't put more cash in, the banks will come and take your stocks.
Yeah.
So there is a different risk profile with margin loans and getting a mortgage for a house.
Mm.
Now, there are some other lending products that for stocks that are a little bit different. But I think the long and the short of it is margin loans are risky. You can lose more than you put in. You can owe the bank money at the end of it. The bank can come and take your assets. And so, like, if you're not confident on it, don't do it. You can live a long and happy life. You can build a lot of wealth without having to take out margin loans.
Yeah, I agree, Ren. There is a place for it in some investors' portfolios, but if you're at the beginning, it's not something to worry about.
Yeah, and I think we've spoken about how we personally have used leverage in our portfolios. We've spoken about leveraged products. And I think we've probably done content on margin loans over the last 5 years as well. So there's like, go have a look, go have a listen if you want to learn more. But again, similar to when you get close to retirement, that's a good time to get advice. If you feel like you're financially secure enough to start borrowing money to invest more, that might be a good time as well to speak to an expert to get some, like, to get them to have a good look at your personal financial situation and figure out what next steps are, how much you can borrow, how you manage risk, all that stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Bryce, this one came in from the Facebook group. You guys say it all the time, but I still don't really understand what thematics mean. If you could break it down, that would be great.
Yeah, cool. Thematics, there are, I'm just going to give examples. The electric vehicle or sustainability thematic, the marijuana thematic, the...
Maybe we take a step back before we just list a whole bunch of examples. Thematics are big trends happening in society.
There you go.
And when we talk about thematics in an investing context, it's how do you invest in these big trends? So to Bryce's point, electric vehicles is a trend that we're all watching play out in front of us. It started with Tesla 10 years ago, and now every major car company has a plan to get rid of all their internal combustion vehicles and become fully electric. Well, maybe not every car company, but it feels like almost every car company. And most of them are trying to do it within the next decade. Like, that is a giant theme that has played out and we are literally watching play out before our eyes.
Yeah. The reason they've come to prominence, I guess, more so in the last, the reason we speak about them more is because it's great that there are now ETFs that allow you to invest in thematics, and there's more and more ETFs coming to the market. For example, the semiconductor thematic we've seen, the hydrogen thematic, these are all ETFs that are now coming to market and allowing us to invest in these thematics.
So explain those two. You just said hydrogen and semiconductors. How are they thematics? Aren't they just things?
They are just things, but we know that with the Internet of Things, everything becoming more digitized, more computers in the world, semiconductors are playing a central role in the development of these technologies. And so investing in the companies that are at the heart of producing semiconductors is an investing thematic.
Yeah, I think they're both things, hydrogen and semiconductors. They are things that will be used a lot more in the future.
Yeah.
And so we don't know who will make those things. So we might not want to invest in an individual company, but we just know that more semiconductors will be needed in the future. And so investing in the thematic isn't trying to say this company is going to be the best investment in the semiconductor industry, but I'm just going to buy a little bit of everything in the semiconductor industry because I know that there'll be heaps more semiconductors used in the future.
I believe in the thematic.
The thematic. And yeah, like, you know, marijuana was a theme that was really hot a few years ago because there was a wave of legalization around the world and a whole bunch of new companies being started to take advantage of that legalization. And a lot of investors said, I have no idea which companies are going to win and which, you know, what the next Coca-Cola or Anheuser-Busch for the weed industry is going to be. But I know that people will, as it becomes more and more legal around the world, I know that more weed will be smoked in the future than in the past. And so people invested in that thematic.
All right, Ren, a question around dividends. Some of our community are seeing dividend yields or percentages next to the dividend of between 4%, 10%, 15% in some cases, and I'd love to see it up to 300%.
I feel you only say that in bloody crypto staking.
So the question is, firstly, a dividend in the high teens, the 20s, is it real? And what is the difference between all of these percentages?
Yeah, well, let's take a step back and before we try and answer, is it real? Is money real? Is it all just a construct by central banks?
Okay, yeah. Let's
let's talk about how it's calculated. So the Yahoo finances, the data providers, whoever, the Google finances of the world, the way that they calculate that percentage is they look at what the last year's dividend was paid and then they compare it to today's share price. And that then they say that's the dividend yield. So very simply, if in 2021, Equity Mates Media paid a dividend of 10 cents a share and our share price was $1, then our dividend yield was 10%. If then podcasting becomes out of favor and the Equity Mates Media share price falls by half, so now our share price is 50%, the last dividend we paid was still 10 cents. And so then Yahoo Finance, Google Finance, all these data providers would be telling us that the Equity Mates Media dividend yield is now 20%. The dividend hasn't changed. It's just the share price has fallen. And similarly, if that $1 share price we had, if we had a great year and we doubled our share price to $2, the last dividend we paid was still 10 cents. And so we'd be seeing our dividend yields as 5%. Mm. So the dividend yield number is always backwards looking. So I think that's where you got to start. That's how it's calculated. So yes, most of the time it is real, but sometimes you'll see, oh, this company has a 16% dividend yield. That's epic. I think Magellan, I was looking at a couple of days ago, and their dividend yield is, their dividend yield is 15% at the moment. But that's because their share price has fallen a lot recently. And so maybe they'll pay a 15% dividend, but maybe they'll also reduce their dividend and we'll see a smaller dividend next time. Mm. That's the key thing when you're looking at the dividend yield number. Companies have a real incentive to not change their dividend too much because investors, especially older investors and retirees, want certainty when it comes to dividends. So you don't see them move too much, but the yield percentage that you're seeing is backwards looking.
I think that flows into the next question, which is around falling into dividend traps and the risk of focusing on the share price and the dividend yield rather than the underlying fundamentals of the company, like profitability and growth. So you're right, Ren, buying into a stock that has a 15% dividend yield next to it is absolutely no guarantee that that's what is going to be the yield when they pay you a dividend as a shareholder the next time around. So don't be fooled by the yields. Do a bit of research and understand how consistently that company has been paying dividends, where the company is at in its cycle. Has it just announced that it's actually in a world of trouble? There must be reasons that the share price has fallen, and subsequently, are they likely to pay out the same dividends going forward?
And if you want to do some research on dividends, and if you're really interested in dividends, Google the term dividend aristocrats. That's a group of companies that have paid and increased their dividend every year for at least 25 consecutive years. And I think in the US there's like 65 companies that are known as aristocrats. And, you know, past performance is no guarantee of future performance, all of that stuff. But it's an interesting rabbit hole to go down and to think about how these companies for 25 years. That's almost as long as we've been alive.
I know.
Almost as long as I've been alive. You're a little bit older. So there are some companies that like that is their core focus. Everything they do is like capital management to just incrementally increase their dividend year after year.
All right. Well, only a couple to go, Ren. What are your opinions on buying individual stocks that are already allocated in your ETF holdings?
Yeah, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer with this. And with so many things in investing, the number one thing is to be aware of it. You don't want to do it mindlessly, I guess. If you believe in a company and you want more exposure to them, there's nothing wrong with it. Especially if you're buying, let's say, ASX 200 ETF, 200 biggest Australian companies. What's a company near the bottom of the ASX 200 these days? Like Southern Cross Media, Zip, Ooh Media, or they might, anyway, like one of those companies. Like if you were super bullish on outdoor advertising and you were like, outdoor advertising is going to be how everyone advertises in the future because after 2 years in the pandemic, no one wants to stay inside and we're going to put a billboard on every car and driver and, you know, just like if that was your thesis and you had an ASX 200 ETF, Ooh Media would be a tiny percentage of that ETF. It wouldn't really move the needle. So in that case, you might say, well, yeah, I'm happy to have this overlap because I really believe in this one company and I want more exposure to it. So like that's a perfectly fine way of investing. But I think the important thing to be aware of is if you have like an American ETF, like an S&P 500, and you're sort of lukewarm on Apple, but you buy some more anyway, you just have to know that the S&P 500 ETF is going to really be affected by Apple, and then you own some more Apple as well.
Yeah, for sure.
As with everything in investing and probably in life, it's just being about like really intentional with your decisions and knowing what you own and being willing to own more of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no point owning the FANG Plus ETF with 10 of the largest tech stocks and then owning 5 of those tech stocks on the side kind of thing. Like that to me is a bit pointless.
Yeah. Well, unless you were like, those 5 are the only 5 companies I believe in. And
sure. Well, then, yeah. Why buy the ETF?
Yeah, that is a fair question, but you know, people might have their reasons.
All right, Ren, to close out, and it's been a great episode. If you do have more questions, hit us up at contact@equitymates.com. As well, a lot of the other shows in our network also run a Q&A. So the You're in Good Company Girls, the CVE Boys, Comedian V Economist, make sure you're checking them out and listening to their shows. And if you have questions for them as well, feel free to hit them up. But closing out, what resources do we use for research and ideas? This is a never-ending question, one that I think is asked every single time. So there's plenty of options.
I would separate the two, research and ideas. And I think ideas comes before research. And ideas is the hard thing. Like there's a lot of platforms, and we can talk about some of them, where once you have an idea, you can research it. But ideas are literally the million-dollar question at some point. And best book I have read to think about where you get ideas is One Up on Wall Street by Peter Lynch. And he talks about a number of different ways that you can find investing ideas. That is difficult. I think there's stock screeners and stuff that you can use. You can look at the numbers. Warren Buffett reads 500 pages a day, and that's how he comes across ideas, by just sitting in a room and doing the work. But I think the best way to come up with ideas is just be really observant of everything that's going on around you. What you want to buy more of, what companies you're noticing advertising more, what your friends and family are talking about, recent purchases they've made that they tell you about at a party or a family barbecue. Just being really aware of what's going on. Julia Lee, who we've had on the show a couple of times, speaks about how she looks at shopping catalogs and looks at what companies are discounting, and then walks through retail stores and look at what companies are getting more shelf space. So just being really aware of what's going on around you. So I think ideas are difficult because they're by definition new.
So they don't have to be new. I would say there's plenty of content where experts are spitting out ideas left, right, and center.
Okay, that is a completely fair point. But they're new to you.
Yeah. But like, you don't have to be looking in catalogs to come up with a fresh idea.
Or you listen to heaps of content. You do the work that way.
Podcasts, yeah. YouTube. Yeah. Like, there's plenty of
Be the modern day Warren Buffett. He reads 500 pages a day. You listen to 5+ hours of investing content a day.
Investors love talking about what they're doing.
You're bound to come up with ideas. So that's the idea side of it, I think, if that's where we start. Then the research. So Bryce, you've got an idea, the light bulb above your head. How do you then research that idea?
Firstly, start with the qualitative side of things and have a look at Google news articles, jump on the website, have a look at their company reports. There's so much information on investor relations sites for website. Let's take Woolies as an example. You can go on there. There's an investor center. They have all their market updates. They have their presentations that they give to investors to tell you how they've performed, what their strategy is over the coming years. If you Google the name, there's likely to be some written research by other investors as well on a company. So just start to wade through that. And then if you want to have a look at some of the fundamentals and whatnot, we use a platform called Ticker, TIKR. I think it's a freemium model now,
which is
a bit unfortunate because it was a really good platform. I
mean, it's still good, but it was a really good free platform.
Then you could also use Google Finance, Yahoo Finance, and just start having a look at some of the quantitative aspects, balance sheet, cash flow, valuation metrics, yeah. those sorts of things.
A lot of that stuff is the company also publishes themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the company has a vested interest in making so much information public. And so looking on their website is really important. But and then you have to take it with a grain of salt because the company is obviously always going to put their spin on things. But honestly, there is so much information out there now. There's too much information. The skill isn't in finding the information anymore. The skill is in distilling all of that information into what matters. And that is just a muscle. Like yeah. we're not great at it. A lot of professional investors aren't great at it. It is just something that you only get good at by continuing to try and yeah. continuing to learn and continuing to practice.
Nice one. Well, that brings us to the end. Thank you for everyone who has submitted questions via Facebook, Instagram, at our contact at equitymates.com email. Keep them coming. We'll endeavor to do another episode of these further down the track. But just a reminder, subscribe to The Dive to get your shot of business news in a way that actually is enjoyable and makes sense. And don't forget to sign up to FinFest. Head to equitymates.com/finfest to register your details. We're going to be announcing some pretty exciting advances on that front pretty soon. So it's been a great episode, Ren. As always, great to chat, and we'll pick it up next week.
Sounds good.
Get Started Investing is a product of Equitymates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Get Started Investing are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the EquityMates website where you can find the ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media and the hosts of Get Started Investing acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.